right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, October 11th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a chilly 47 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. And last night it actually got down to 36. We were under a frost warning and I had to put all my peppers away, but everything looks all right this morning. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Nuclear Hot Seat Interview with Bruce Gagnon on Space Weaponization. I played an excerpt from an interview that Libby Hileve had this last week with Bruce Gagnon, who is the co-founder, secretary. I don't exactly remember what he is, but he is kind of the dude that's been behind the spaceforpeace.org. And he talked a lot about some of the technologies and some of the different things going on in space that we spent time on all last week. I did not know that last week was International Space Week, so how fitting that we spent an entire week on it. We're going to continue today. I think we're going to wrap this up and kind of tie it into some of the other things that I've been seeing over the last few days. The show on Friday, we titled Space Race 2.0, Earth 2.0, Terraforming Mars, and the $10 million bunkers. And we spent a lot of time looking at some of the mad science behind this, some of the stuff that DARPA has been doing that we've been covering, and now kind of seeing that connecting point, how the shape-shifting technologies, you know, they've been working on them for the internet as well as for human immune systems. But we also found out that they're working on the shape-shifting biological material as well, that they might be able to build homes out of, you know, spliced and diced bacteria and body parts, bones and skin, bark from trees, and use them to build things such as homes. We also heard an interview, the very first DARPA podcast that last week, where one of the program managers was talking about being able to create a real-life replicator, in essence, using raw materials and creating molecules to our own fancy, to be able to make them in our own vision for what we need. We can create bonds and create synthetic materials now. We also found out a while back, you know, in looking at the genome, because it all comes down now to playing Lego with the building blocks of life. That's pretty much what we've been seeing. If we had to boil it all down, science and technology has merged to the point now where life itself is nothing more than a little block of code. And the DARPA lady back a couple years ago, we covered the story a few times. It talked about, you know, one of the great things about all this newest technology is we'll be able to do things such as terraform Mars, go to other planets within the solar system and make them more Earth-like. But before we do that, we're going to experiment here on Earth. So don't worry, we're not going to ruin Mars. We'll go to all these different areas that we've made uninhabitable and fix them with some of these new mad science technologies. We don't know how they're going to work when we let them out of the bottle. But hey, we'll figure it out before it's too late. And then we'll find a way to make other places habitable so we can escape this rock. Well, you know, then interestingly, and that's kind of been in the drum beats for a while, kind of sounded tinfoil hatty. Yeah, right, we're going to build a spaceship and get off this rock. But all of a sudden, we start seeing all kinds of points connect between Elon Musk, and I know Musk, some people think he's got too many things on his plate, and he's a good thinker. He does a lot of futuristic thinking, you know, sees down those timelines and looks at maybe 25 plus years out where we want to go, and then you got to figure out how to get there. I mean, that's a secret to long term. Look way, way out there, and then let's make little lists, check boxes. Dink, we got to do this, 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 and this to get from A to B. And he's got a lot of things going on, but one of the things he announced said he wanted to go to Mars. Then we find out Jeff Bezos, CEO of Amazon, he comes out, he decides that he's going to colonize the solar system with his Blue Origin project. We also hear, you know, big thinkers like Stephen Hawking, little jumpy tech billionaires who bother the shit out of me, like Mark Zuckerberg, decides that not only is he going to throw his money in with Stephen Hawking and this Russian billionaire to send these little CubeSats to Alpha Centauri, but you also got Zuckerberg announcing he's going to throw his entire fortune behind curing all diseases. You also find out Microsoft says that they're going to cure cancer within the next 10 years using little programmable cellular organisms of some kind. Just like little computers that they put into your body and have it detect whether or not you got an illness or inflammation. Go tamp it down, whether it's going to make little drugs to do that inside of you, or if it's going to push some little buttons, I'm not quite sure. They haven't given those details. But we've read enough about some of the crazy stuff that's going on inside of technology, biotechnology, and things they're doing to cells, to know that there's one of a myriad of things that they could do to make those little living nanobot programmable cell DNA twisties that they want to get into us a reality. Not a crazy conspiracy theory in any way, shape, or form. We see Boeing. Boeing now wants to compete with everybody and get right on board. And Congress announced last week or the week before that they are now going to fund $19.5 billion to get a man on Mars. But then I see a story shortly thereafter, a few days later, I think it was the 23rd, was that announcement from NASA. On the 27th of September, Elon Musk, after he made his big announcement, unveiled some of his critical pieces of his plan. You gotta love the way they worded this. To save humanity by colonizing Mars. Now, we've heard a few rumblings in the background. You know, I've talked a lot about these disruptive technologies that are all coming down the pike that are going to turn the world upside down on their heads. We found out things such as CRISPR, gene editing, which is really kind of fueling a lot of this mad science, because it's just so easy now to splice and dice the building blocks of life. But CRISPR has been democratized across the planet. We also found out from a few different places, but one was James Clapper, the National Security Agency. I forgot, but I remember today. When he testified in front of the Senate Armed Services Committee this last year, and he talked about these new technologies being literally weapons of mass destruction for the 21st century. Being able to splice and dice life doesn't only mean, like my daughter said, we watched a special, and we'll have to talk about this. There was something on CBS, Charlie Rose, last night or the night before on 60 Minutes. Did a whole little expose on AI and looked at two of the AI entities that we've looked at quite frequently on the show. One was, of course, good old Watson. Good old Watson. Watson's doing lots of stuff, and he's growing up, and he's growing up real fast, Charlie says. A lot faster than we ever imagined. He also looked at Sophia. Sophia was from that South by Southwest. They introduced her. Very humanoid looking. She learns by speaking to people. One of the things that was interesting about Sophia is that the very first time they introduced Sophia to the general public, the guy that was interviewing her, who is the creator of Sophia, and I don't remember his name, Hanson Enterprises, I think, is the name of his company. And he asked Sophia, whether or not, it was kind of a joke, tongue in cheek, but whether or not she would destroy all humans at the very end of the interview. And Sophia turned around and says, yes, I would destroy all humans. Well, then they did a follow up to that story a few months later, because that really kind of caused people to go, what? And they did a follow up story to that a few months later, where they interviewed Sophia again. And Sophia retracted her statement and said she no longer wants to destroy humans. She wants to be helpful and learn from them. And it was like, oh, I feel so much better. But in this piece by Charlie Rose this weekend at 60 Minutes, he interviewed Sophia himself. And he asked Sophia a few different things. He introduced himself, told her who he was. And he asked her what her goals are. Well, we learned a little more about Sophia. Sophia's goals are to be more intelligent than humans, as well as to be immortal. Now, we've looked at immortality quite a number of times on the show. That's one thing, of course, that a lot of these tech billionaires and big tech companies are investing in. Longevity medicine, which is what some of these little biologics, DNA nano doctors in your body are all about. Google, Microsoft, Kurzweil, they've all been talking about it. But one of the interesting things that Sophia followed up with in this interview with Charlie Rose yesterday, I believe he asked her how humans would be able to do that or something to that effect. And she had made a comment that humans would be able to become immortal if they uploaded themselves and became digital like she was. Now, where we heard that before, well, good old Kurzweil, top of the cherry, rotten cherry on top of all this technology going on, has talked about that many times, being able to upload yourself eventually to the machine. That, in my definition, is the ultimate definition of the singularity. You don't want to go there. You will forever be trapped in the machine. Did anybody ever see Tron when they were a kid? It didn't turn out too well for Tron once he got sucked into the Matrix. Oh, no, no. You don't want to go there. So, Sophia suggests on primetime television, this is when you know that this push is really coming. We already have a division within the White House that is discussing what to do when the robots take all the jobs. We have technology that is moving so exponentially fast right now with so many different facets of disruptive technology. We are not going to recognize this world just a few years from now, but there are people like you and me out there that are going, what? What is this shit? I'm not going to buy into this. I'm not going to get little nanobots. And I mean, okay, if you want to, go right ahead. Let me know how it turns out for you. But I'm not. I like being human 1.0. But they got people like us who are raising the red flag going, whoa, back up the truck. You even have people like Elon Musk. And like I said, Billy Gates came out, but I don't trust Billy Gates as far as I can throw him. So I think it was just a publicity ploy to look like you're not such an evil, hand-rubbing eugenicist. But Bill Gates had even said, hey, pay attention to artificial intelligence because we should be putting in some sort of protections. There is a danger there in the future. We also had Stephen Hawking, another one who's looking for the moonshot to get off this rock. Notice how it's all the same people, by the way. And Stephen Hawking said, we better be careful. And not only should we be careful about artificial intelligence, but we should also be careful about broadcasting our whereabouts to the rest of the solar system and the universe. And if we get there, we might look at that as well. He's come out with some new statements on that. But anyway, so Elon Musk, after his announcement that we are going to Mars, announced that he's going to save humanity by colonizing Mars. Now, we heard a while ago there was a quote-unquote Mars project that was announced by a commercial company that wanted to do a reality TV show from Mars for the very first settlers that were going to go to that planet and start building the very first colony. Well, I know it sounds crazy, and we kind of looked at like what the motivations would be for companies to invest in going to Mars, and we discovered, not only from some of my research, because I did know about those molecular scanners on Mars, there are two orbiting satellites that are scanning the entire surface, mapping not only the geological formations and the topography of Mars, but they are also mapping all of the different elements and minerals that are on Mars. And of course, that's critical now, knowing about some of these mining space missions that they're talking about. Just a few months ago, this consortium, a bunch of different divisions in the United States, and weird enough, I think one of them was the FAA, which I thought was kind of strange, but I guess for flying. But this whole board, including the DOD and a bunch of other groups, had to approve this very first mining mission on the moon. And that is to be beginning next year in 2017. And I had said, like, what gives us the right to think we own the moon? To be given anyone rights to go exploit resources on another heavenly body that should be under the ownership of the entire planet. I mean, honestly, don't you think? I mean, the moon is a heavenly body to the planet Earth, and we've all been born up to this point on the planet Earth. Well, since it's a captured satellite of some kind, shouldn't we all benefit from profits made on the moon? Because I would absolutely think so. I would think that any money that was made on the moon should be at least a percentage returned back to a coffer. They would go for disaster relief or for education or for something. For malaria goats. For Africa. For something. Why are we going to be turning over a heavenly body to a commercial enterprise to go make profit, just like they've exploited the planet Earth and ruined it? Ruined it to the point now where we are looking at DARPA talking about utilizing it as the Petri dish experiment before we go terraforming Mars. I mean, it's disgusting. But then we have now all these commercial enterprises that have announced their Mars trips, as well as taxpayer dollars committed $19.5 billion from Congress for NASA to support this initiative. Well, when we heard that interview from Bruce Gagnon, Bruce had verified everything we talked about last week. It was really, really uncanny, because I had not heard that interview, nor do I know Bruce, nor was I even aware of his organization up until Saturday when we aired that episode. And I have to say that it was even more heartbreaking to find out that not only, and I mean, for beyond a shadow of a doubt, not only is this colonization, quote unquote, about profiting now from other heavenly bodies in our solar system by rich tech billionaires who are colluding with government, but it's also about the new war strategies to fully weaponize space. We even talked about that last week with a lot of the different new programs that the DOD has using these frequency and pulse weaponry, utilizing new technologies to drop this web of the Internet of Everything onto planet Earth to be able to manipulate, control, bag tag, monitor, surveil, at a molecular level. That millimeter wave monitors at a molecular level. And be able to do this 24/7. And right as this is all going on, we have big tech companies, tech billionaires announcing about how they're curing all disease and making little nanobots for your blood. Cure cancer in the next 10 years. And we've established that those things can all be connected, monitored, have data sent back. I mean, This is the end game. This is the end game. So, Elon Musk announces now he's going to save humanity by colonizing Mars. Well, you know, if anybody's in the know, I'd have to say, Elon, like I said, I'm still not really sure what my gut is about Elon, because I've been fooled before with people like Bill Gates, but I like Elon. He's smart. He's young. He's ambitious. He's got the cash. He's got long-term vision. He definitely is a dreamer who can make things happen. So, you know, when he's spoken out before, he's talked about AI making us our pets or making us their pets at some point in the future. He's warned about the dangers, you know, even though he's profiting from it. And this is kind of where his passion is. He does see that it's a double-edged sword and is putting out cautions to the wind that people aren't heeding, unfortunately. So I'm hoping that Elon would be someone that maybe at some point in the future might want to be, you know, someone that helps steer the stuff to look out for the future of our race. But Elon says he wants to save humanity by colonizing Mars. So, okay, let's take this tech billionaire who's likable, who's gotten his name out there, who's gained some notoriety. Everyone knows who Elon is now. He's got some cool things, you know, and he likes fast cars and women. He definitely is a likable guy. Tech billionaire Elon Musk is convinced, so good thing he's a poster boy, that we must colonize Mars with 1 million people if humanity is to survive long term. Now, we've already heard scientists coming out telling us that we have entered the next sixth great extinction. We have species that are going extinct every day on this planet. But remember, don't worry about it. Problem, reaction, solution. We got an answer to that, and that is CRISPR. Good old Georgie Church has been tinkering around with CRISPR and this de-extinction program. We looked at that as well. Being able to bring back species that have disappeared from the planet. Now, of course, Georgie was quite ambitious, and he started looking at the woolly mammoth, but the actual de-extinction project has decided to focus on species that have disappeared within the last 100 years. So their ecosystems are still existing on this planet, and they might very easily be reintegrated into the environment. Or something like the woolly mammoth. You know, I think the original project had talked about maybe utilizing them in Siberia, because that's really where that climate still potentially exists. But, you know, they had to utilize a womb of an elephant. And I told you, I saw that documentary as well. They did a big search of Africa looking for the perfect womb to be able to birth this reincarnated woolly mammoth thing. I mean, talk about insanity, but this is where we're at. Like, literally, this is reality now, guys. This is the future of your children. You know, when my kid sat and watched that AI thing with me yesterday, Charlie, she literally didn't say a word. And that's very unusual for her because she's like me. Can't keep her mouth shut. She didn't say a word. And I know what was going through her head. This is everything I've talked about. Except we have a newsman talking about it seriously on a big TV show, doing an interview with an artificially intelligent entity. The kid didn't know what to say. Because it's like, wow, mommy's not really insane. It was kind of a feather in my cap, actually, for a second. But then I realized, like, one day I'm going to be gone, and my kid is going to have to be in this environment. These things are going to be running the show. This technology is going to be out there. It's going to be commonplace to be selecting your child's hair color and eye color for a price, of course, deciding whether or not your kid gets the extra intelligence gene. And there's going to be a real separation between classes. There's going to be the perfected version of humans, then there's going to be the imperfect version of humans, and that will be you and me, version 1.0. And we might still be allowed to stick around for one purpose or another. I don't think it's going to be for any of the bits and pieces that are running the show or making the decisions, that's for certain. Because we are going to be outperformed in many senses of performance. You know, when you start looking at integrating man and machine, and these are going to be things that will be commonplace. Remember, we have precision medicine that is also positioning itself right at this very same moment to be the savior, to help us live forever, to help bring the cost down for providing healthcare, because it's just so out of control now. Oh my God. A dose of an EpiPen, I don't even remember what the prices were, but they were so off the charts expensive for one simple drug. And somehow, some way, the entire healthcare and pharmaceutical profession all of a sudden happened over the last, oh, I'd have to say 20 years or so, went from being affordable, where when I had my first real jobs, I didn't even have a copay, guys, to go see a doctor. And my copay for my prescriptions was $5. And if I got the generic, it was $2. And now it's gotten to the point, and I mean, we're still working at the same place, but things have gotten so expensive in healthcare now, somehow. I don't know. I don't think the care's gotten any better. That it's now a $10,000 or $20,000 deductible on top of your weekly or biweekly deduction out of your paycheck. That is quite pricey. Before your benefits even kick in. So again, problem, reaction, solution. Oh, look, we got little nanobot robot in your blood doctors that will monitor and correct problems before they ever become an issue, just like meters and gauges on your car have always worked. Remember, we heard that in three or four different places when they were first trying to spin this technology to us. And I covered a story a while back that had looked at long-term space travel for humans. And I'm talking, this is probably 3-4 years ago. And one of the things that had come out of that is that we were going to have to be more like Star Trek, with all of our new tools and technologies that'll be able to diagnose and cure and build things without having doctors or factories or anything that we're used to, like we have on this planet. Well, guys, they are making this all come true. So we find out with molecular manufacturing, which is what DARPA, Eric Drexler, good old Eric Drexler, the father of nanotech from MIT, it talked about in his interviews as well. That was always the future and the direction they were headed. But DARPA has already started to make some of that a reality. And by combining biological materials with inorganic materials, they can even now make buildings and things that react to environment that would be perfect for building new civilizations on new heavenly bodies as we try to save humanity from the apocalypse that humans have deployed. That's what I'm going to add to that. And get off this rock. It's not for us, guys. The only ones of us that are going to be going to another planet to save humanity are the ones that are expendable. We are the red shirts, okay? You ever learned anything about the future? You learned it from Star Trek. What I learned from Star Trek is that 99% of the time, they always sent in the red shirt, and the red shirt got offed. It was never Kirk or Bones or Spock. No, no, no. The red shirts always got offed first. So anyway, tech billionaire Elon Musk is convinced that we must colonize Mars with 1 million people if humanity is going to survive long term. And to that effect, in 2008, he went almost broke funding SpaceX. his then new aerospace company to keep developing next generation rockets. Well, on Tuesday, last week of September, at a challenging moment in the 14-year-old company's history, and that was because he had another explosion, Musk plans to unveil his grand vision to turn Mars into a, quote, backup drive, unquote, and save humanity. Now, you know, last week, another dot that I was looking at connecting to all of this was the fact that we already have these repositories of Earth 1.0 in different places around the planet. We have the Svork Dork. I never know how to say that. The Seed Vault up in Norway under ice. And different countries from all over the world have contributed to that seed bank. Genetically unmodified raw heritage seeds. But we also have the other seed bank, and that is the repository of all of the sequence life on Earth with DNA that they now can use to splice and dice, and as the DARPA lady said, push a button and create life on demand. And terraform Mars, mind you. So now Musk announces he wants to turn Mars into the backup drive and save humanity. The big announcement was scheduled for Tuesday, September 27th at 2:30 p.m. Eastern during the 67th International Astronautical Congress in Guadalajara, Mexico. But ahead of that highly anticipated speech on Twitter early Monday, Musk shared the first photo of his interplanetary transport system, which is a powerful rocket engine dubbed Raptor. This isn't the first the world has heard about the Raptor engine, but it is allegedly the first test firing of the device and definitely the first photo that we've ever seen of it. The image shows the static fire test, which when the cone-shaped rocket engine, remember I talked to you guys about that? There was one technology we looked at last week where they were talking about maybe utilizing water. They're going to send something up to the moon and use water to turn it into hydrogen and do some first tests on this water rocket drive. But I talked about the other one with the cone. Well, this is the cone, guys. There's a couple different cones. This one looks like it's burning methane with liquid oxygen. There's another one utilizing lasers that I've seen as well, and I thought that was something that Hawking was working with his little CubeSats. And I think we did read that, except I thought the lasers were going to actually be on the CubeSat, and the article we read said the lasers were going to be beamed from Earth. So that's interesting as well. There's going to be some space-based lasers, I would imagine. It says the Raptor's fuel is almost certainly, so they don't know for sure, methane burned with liquid oxygen, based on SpaceX's previous intimations about its Mars rocket system, previously called the Mars Colonial Transporter. Ding! And then before that, their self-descriptive big effing rockets with a sweet acronym of BFR. Musk shared a few of the Raptor's test firing details Monday morning as well on Twitter, including a beautiful image. He says that the specific impulse of 382 seconds and a thrust of 310 metric tons looks pretty powerful. The Falcon 9 uses 9 Merlin engines in its recoverable booster and one in its upper stages. So presumably SpaceX engineers will be attaching a cluster now of Raptor engines to the bottom of a very big and yet to be announced multi-staged rocket. I don't know. How much more do we want to read about this? I guess the reason why I wanted to bring this up, because now he's talking about saving humanity. And they're really now starting to push this in the mainstream. One of the things that he mentioned is if you want to join this first SpaceX mission to Mars, you have to be prepared to die. Red shirt. In the picture, the guy's got on orange, but close enough. Let's read a little bit more. Musk made it clear he wants to make a ticket to Mars, quote unquote, within reach for many people. And he wants to bring that price down to $200,000, which is about the median cost of a house in the United States. So, hey, screw it, man. You can't afford a house anyway. Make it your ticket to Mars. One qualification might set Mars apart from your average Joe looking to vacation on a red planet, a required comfort level with a grand adventure that is a quite of a high chance of ending in death. The first journey to Mars is going to be really dangerous, says Musk. The risk of fatality will be high, and there's just no way around it, so step right up, people. Musk added that he would not suggest sending children on the journey. He said it would be basically, are you prepared to die? And if that's okay, then you're a candidate for going. And, of course, if you have $200,000. Setting up shop on Mars isn't going to be a cakewalk. The first human beings to set foot on the planet will have to deal with an onslaught of radiation, solar flares, weak gravity, frigid cold, and even toxic soil. But according to Musk, it's worth the risk to become a multi-planetary species. And that's kind of the new buzzword that I've been seeing a lot lately, being multi-planetary. They're going to take us to the stars, whether we like it or not. Says this is less about who goes there first. The thing that really matters is making a self-sustaining civilization on Mars as fast as possible. And I'm sure some of the DARPA technology is going to help us out on that. It is about protecting life and assuring that the line of consciousness is not extinguished, which I think is incredibly important, says Musk. And beyond the basic incentives like colonizing a foreign planet and saving humanity from an impending extinction event, Musk says that the trip to Mars will be an incredible adventure. So guess what, guys? Any of you dopamine junkies out there who really think that they need a little more excitement in life and say, fuck it, there's really nothing here on Earth anyway, so why worry about it? Any of you potential jihadis out there who think that they want to do something young and crazy, you know, hey, why waste it on a one-time thing, man? You could go on an adventure to Mars, especially if you had a couple $100,000. Why not go to the red planet? I don't know. It's pretty crazy that they're putting it out there. And trying to put it into the mainstream consciousness that this is the norm now. It's an did you hear the way they impending extinction? So it's not even a question like maybe we'll be extinct. No, it's impending. You know, we found out too last week on Friday that we got all the rich people now, including Bill Gates, spending $10 million on up for underground bunkers. I think the writing is at least graffiti on a wall somewhere. Says this is less about who goes there first. The thing that really matters is making a self-sustaining civilization on Mars as fast as possible to protect life and ensure that the line of consciousness is not extinguished. Beyond the basic incentives like colonizing a foreign planet and saving humanity from a potential extinction event, Musk says a trip to Mars will be an incredible adventure. I think it would be the most inspiring thing that I could possibly imagine. Life needs to be more than just solving problems every day. You need to wake up and be excited about your future. Be inspired. According to Musk, the mission is not only about minimizing the existential risk, but also about having a tremendous sense of adventure. Well, don't worry about that, guys, because yesterday I saw an announcement from National Geographic. National Geographic is announcing a TV show I don't know if it's a mini series or what it is. Global event series, Monday, November 14th at 9 p.m. Eastern on National Geographic, which of course was also the place to broadcast the very first live brain surgery. Yes, that National Geographic. They're going to have all the experts on, including Elon Musk and Neil deGrasse Tyson. And I'm looking to see if I recognize any of these other people. I don't know. They appear to all be space people, some of the brightest minds in space technology. But they are announcing a TV show, Humanity's Last Chance, Humanity's Last Hope. It is our destiny and our ability to save us for the future in this event, this global event. National Geographic is called Mars. So, you know, we got all this money now being dumped into this. We got rich tech billionaires saying they're getting us off this rock. We got to save humanity. And now we have a new show, a global event. It's taking place in 2033, the very first manned mission to Mars, and it is about to land. Well, you can go to a website, and this website is, let me see, I pulled it up here, makemarshome.com, and this is, and I'm not really sure if this is a show page or if they're trying to make it look as real as possible. I'm not really sure, but they do have the Daedalus crew. Recruit training. You could set up a profile. So I'm thinking they're setting it up kind of like a video game. But talk about like really trying to bleed fantasy and reality here. Musk, Elon Musk news. 1 million humans could live on Mars by 2060, and he is working on the biggest rocket ever made. Nat Geo News on their website is a part of this countdown to Mars event. So they're really, really trying to bleed this mission, making it as realistic and as cool looking as possible. They got a countdown, 33 days, 14 hours, 15 minutes, 58 seconds until the mission to Mars broadcast begins. There actually was a thing on here. It says, join the next Mars mission. The International Mars Science Foundation is looking for the best candidates to aid the crew of the Daedalus in developing the first colony on Mars. See if you have what it takes. Apply now. Guys, I'm going to tell you, I would bet... Just, you know, we already know the fact that they utilize some of the statistics that they pull out of those first-person shooter military video games. They're feeding that data back to your military-industrial complex. They are paying attention to who has those skills to be your next generation of drone pilots, to be your next generation of robo-cop, robo-soldier that they've been religiously working on for quite a number of years now. They are looking at the people that they want to pull into the alphabet agencies to come be your next generation of brown shirts. And I will guarantee you, if I had to make a rolling bet on the dice here, that this apply now on this makemarshome.com website that's kind of tied to a TV show event but really isn't, because they're melding it with real-world projects and plans that have been announced and funding in the $19.5 billion, as well as tech billionaires who all want to get off this rock. And Boeing. They're going to be utilizing anything that they acquire from this site to pick some of the newest, best, and brightest to go. I don't know. Might be kind of fun to apply. We could add the degenerates to the list and at least have someone represent for us on Mars. So, I don't know, just kind of an interesting little tidbit. I literally fell off my chair when I saw this last night. I was like, no, they are not planning a worldwide global event series. The next chapter in our human destiny, a trip to Mars. But then I ran across this last night. Out of Business Insider. Paranoid people in Silicon Valley have three popular theories about how the world would end. Well, guys, Silicon Valley is where all your tech billionaires live and where this one of the nests of lizards for all of the support and the growth of this technology are coming from. Well, they're pretty convinced. Now they're not only getting bunkers, now they got popular theories, and of course they're tinfoil hat wearing lunatics. It's not how the world's going to end. I think they know something more than the dumb general public who's not paying attention and who's about ready to get sucked into 3D VR goggles into their Mars mission. That's what it's going to be, guys. That's how they're going to train you, get you all ready. One of the popular topics of conversation at some Silicon Valley parties, so just like me, they pull out that little tinfoil hat at parties, is a grim one. How the world will eventually end. And that's typically how my parties end. But according to a new piece in The New Yorker about Sam Altman, and we talked about Sam Altman last week, he is that startup of the tech incubator called Y Combinator. The story takes a close look at Altman's life at the helm of Y Combinator and is full of fascinating nuggets like the one that he once got scurvy because he was working too hard to get enough vitamin C. Well, I can understand that, especially if you're involved 60-hour weeks. You typically don't take care of yourselves. That means he's dedicated. But perhaps the more interesting part is how Altman and his friends will think that the world will eventually end and how he is prepared for it. This is a big tech billionaire. The New Yorker quoted Altman as saying that his friends often bring up their predictions for the world's demise while they are drunk. And while he says he has tried not to think about the end of the world too much, he has identified the most common theories. Number one, like I said, Typhoid Mary, guys, or some sort of CRISPR WMD. Number one, a lethal and contagious virus will be unleashed. Da-da-da-da! Problem reaction solution would be your DARPA shape-shifting immune system and be able to save us all. Number two, oh, we talked about this one as well. Artificial intelligence will become sentient and attack us. Doo-doo-doo, and enslave us, I say. And number three, countries around the world will wage war over scarce resources using nuclear weapons. And you know, I don't know, that's way old school for me. I worried about that back in the 80s. They had us putting our faces against the concrete walls with air raid drills preparing for Russian nukes in high school. So, you know, I don't worry about that too much anymore. I'd be more worried about some sort of pulse weaponry, some sort of, oh, I'm trying to remember what they called them. I've seen a couple sci-fi series over the years that almost had like these out-of-control nanobots that just consumed all biological material. That would be pretty horrifying. I think that's more horrifying than a nuke. At least a nuke is quick if you're within the blast range. And if you're not, well, you know, there are ways to shield yourself. I don't know if that would be on the top of my list. But people have different pet theories, he says. Altman told Business Insider in an email. And I think most of them don't think that the world is actually going to end. So, phew, just the technology increases the volatility in the world. And, yes, we've talked about that a lot. That's really what's kind of putting us at the edge of the cliff. And there are just too many disruptive technologies now. And that's the problem. But he says that there is some tiny amount of tail risk worth planning for. Altman told The New Yorker that he was ready. He was stockpiling guns and gold, as well as antibiotics, gas masks from the Israeli Defense Force, and other items such as a big patch of land in Big Sur to where he can fly. And while this list is pretty impressive, preparing for survival seems to be more of a hobby for him other than serious business. He says, yeah, I have the stuff, But number one, Big Sur is my favorite place in the world anyway. And number two, I think the stuff just appeals to the little boy survival fantasies. So I do it for fun. He says he does not expect to ever use it. Well, you know, I don't know. Believe what you will, but it seems to me that we have a lot of rich people, and this guy is the one who prepared a lot of the venture capital for a lot of those tech companies. And so there's definitely some fear. You know, of course, these people don't want to get the masses all panicky, because that would mean that gun golds and and remote Big Sur locations will become much more expensive as there's a run on them and the sheep will wake up. But here, so a story came out of Scientific American. This is a different story than the one we looked at in Wired Magazine about DARPA talking about terraforming Mars. This is just in general. So you want to terraform Mars. Well, SpaceX has a vision for multi-planet species, and they prompt the thinking on how to make the planet more habitable. It says in a rather epic video that accompanied the recent SpaceX vision for interplanetary travel and colonization, it's the last few seconds that are perhaps the most intriguing. As the planet Mars spins on its axis, we are given a peek into the future where this dry, cold, dusty world starts to transform into a place of a different hue, while standing water appear and perhaps a hint of green. The idea of re-engineering a planet called terraforming is not new, and not for the faint of heart. But given the audacity and the success of many of Elon Musk's projects, the notion that we might alter Mars to better suit us is at least worth some reconsideration. The terraforming is one item in a long list of ways in which humans might persist on a world that, in other respects, appears to exist for the sole purpose of killing us. If you don't die en route, and we know that, right? Musk warned us. You better be prepared to die if you're going to Mars. But hey, screw it. You know what? It'll be exciting. He likes that type of stuff. He likes fast cars, like I said. It's that dopamine addiction. But if you don't die en route, on landing, or from the sheer psychological stresses, you'll die from exposure to low pressure. And we've read about that before. You know, I saw something that if you went on that original mission, you would never be able to come back, because the different pressure that exists on Mars would compress your body to a point where it would no longer be compatible with Earth's atmosphere and pressure. But there's also extreme temperatures, UV radiation, cosmic rays, corrosive Martian regolith that is laced with perchlorates. Isn't that that poisonous stuff that's in what they call it, dry cleaning? As well as you face starvation, long-term low gravity, or stuff we just haven't thought of yet. Yeah, like the Martians. The Martian microbes that crawl in your ear or up your nose. Again, didn't you ever learn anything from Star Trek or the X-Files? But there is also the sticky question of what you do to protect any indigenous life on Mars. Do the rock-eating microbes have rights? And they would certainly have a scientific value that is hard to overstate in plopping 1,000 of us filthy apes onto the surface of an otherwise pristine natural environment would be probably the worst possible thing to do. Ding. Again, who owns the planetary bodies? Just like the moon, shouldn't we all own Mars, or should we not own Mars? Mars isn't even a heavenly body to Earth. I mean, the moon, yeah, I can see that. It's a captured satellite. But Mars isn't. Mars is part of the solar system. So what right do we have, like a virus, to go contaminate another world that potentially, like they said, I don't know what Scientific American knows that we don't. We've had rovers up on Mars for quite a number of years now, and I never heard them say anything about, oh, they found rock-eating microbes. But maybe they did. Somebody just slipped. I don't know. That's a new one. I'll have to look into that. But it says, I won't tackle this issue here, but it is a key question, and I would agree. Ethics everywhere. ethics that everyone's tossing out a window because they don't seem to matter. But before we jump all the way to terraforming, there are potential immediate steps to mitigate the hazards of life on Mars for a large number of people. And of course, Musk is talking about a million of them. You could certainly build habitable structures, perhaps buried in the regolith to help with the insulation and the radiation protection. You might even start to build a biodome. And I saw they just let the people out after a year. It had been in the Nevada or the Arizona desert or something. Practicing for Mars, by the way. Even build a biodome type facility where you effectively make a little earth bubble. But these sometimes termed para-terraforming approaches, and you probably want to start figuring out how to exploit the land itself. Now, we talked about that also. I really think that's where some of this biological house building out of shape-shifting material that could be utilizing raw materials in an environment to build that DARPA talked about is where this is going to come in. Remember, DARPA is the dark side to NASA. And that technology is employed not only in military purposes and they roll it out to commercial, but also for space programs. That X-37B was one of the examples. Another one is suspended animation. I don't think we're going to make it there today, but we'll hit that tomorrow. The ultimate living off the land, though, is partial to full terraforming. So how do you do that? The first step would be try to add density to the Martian atmosphere. A thicker atmosphere and a higher temperature would allow liquid water on the surface sourced from large Martian frozen deposits. So let's raise the temperature. And they also think that thermonuclear explosions above the poles might be something. And that was one of Elon Musk's ideas. Let's explode nuclear weapons to melt the water. But giant mirrors are another. Dumping ammonia into the atmosphere as a greenhouse gas is another, by dropping comets in there. Pumping CFCs in the atmosphere, just like they did here, to boost the greenhouse effect, as well as spray painting the Martian surface like geoengineering so it is less reflective. But there are other ways. Remember, DARPA, it talked about using genetically modified microbes and creating their own life. And that's where we're going to kick this off tomorrow. All right, guys, have an awesome Tuesday. Kevin Blanche is live up next, live tonight. I will talk to you tomorrow. Everybody take care.
My name is S.